Tell me about the new series of paintings. The one I'm looking at right now is about, I'd say, 3/4 of the way through. It's horizontal, and there's lots of imagery that's coming from the Middle East. And the textiles and things refer back to your other work, but there's a lot of new imagery, too, things that I don't recall seeing in your work before. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
What haven't you seen before?
I think the guns look new to me. I mean, you know, it's interesting because that, you know, there are all these, you know, strong female characters. There's the little girl holding a skateboard, the Skatistan image, and then there's the image of the women looking like they're suffragettes almost, but they're women holding banners that have what look like Islamic text on them. And then they're placed near these images of, like, Lawrence of Arabia and filmmakers and explosions, lots of different things happening.
Okay, I think first I should say that the overall title of this is Hallucinatory Logic in the Sahara Desert.
Hallucinatory Logic in the Sahara Desert.
Sahara Desert. Primarily started to be based on Paul Bowles, The Sheltering Sky, and Lawrence of Arabia, the movie, and Lawrence, the real Lawrence. So a lot of this work plays between fact and fiction. This particular painting is called Take No Prisoners, which is thematic in Lawrence of Arabia, the film. When he had been raped by a Turkish head man and had really not gone into battle, and they went into battle and took no prisoners. And take no prisoners means you kill everything. Mm-hmm. You kill children, you kill women, you kill the animals, which essentially is what broke the real T.E. Lawrence when he went back to be in the army, a private. So that's sort of what this is based on. And then the rest of it comes from things that I've used always before, which is high and low culture, popular culture. And this particular painting is Take No Prisoners - an Amateur Barbarian. And I realized with this series that a lot of the imagery was about men. In fact, there are no female characters at all in Lawrence of Arabia, the film. And the man, one of the main characters in The Sheltering Sky, the woman is also raped.
But that's kind of the point at which the rape scene is the point at which T.E. Lawrence becomes the image of both the man and the woman in this story, because he's becomes an entry point. You know, I mean, he has his body's opened whether he chooses for it to be or not. He becomes like the woman, and there is this, you know, he kind of goes into this point in the movie where he verges on madness, or his face is becomes really featured in the film, and you see this sort of transition point.
He loses it,
yeah. And as an actor, you see that play across his face. You know, you really, really see it in his eyes and in his face very dramatically in that film, where it's this moment of his sexual identity is no longer one that he knows anymore. Like, he's kind of becomes this ambiguous other. You're not sure anymore.
Yeah, and in the in his biography, or autobiography, or whatever, the biography that was written on him, in his later days, he stayed as a soldier. You know, he was still in the army, but at the low level, and that he had one of the other soldiers come in every few weeks and beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this ambiguity about his sexuality always, from when he was in the war to always, it was always there. But I think in this particular painting, it's about, there's these two images of Lawrence with a big, big gun frontally, and Lawrence is shooting himself. So it's about it's kind of about the disintegration of the self with the, I don't know how to say this, psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both frontal, and the guns are very big and very frontal. Tom Nechtel came over to see this painting in progress, and he goes, God, the guns are so big.
Yeah.
But they're this sort of element of male power also. I mean, literally in the phallic mm-hmm. sense, in every sense. And it's sort of strange because 2 days ago I was painting and I went, I need to look up all these images of women with guns. Because it's primarily like a male weapon. But in film noir, you know, cinematic history, women have guns.
Mm-hmm.
So, not in this painting, but I'm thinking of...
The next one, yeah.
Yeah, in the next one. So there's this sort of bottom part, because this is a horizontal landscape, and it's long and it's narrow, that everything surrounds it. Next to them are Tinawaren, who is a band from the desert, and they gave up their guns for their guitars. So there's sort of a simultaneity of past and present. And I really wanted to have women in this painting, because the one before it primarily, the female figure is a Saudi Arabian dress that's floating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you showed me the Afghani skate girls.
Yeah.
So she's a primary figure in the painting. She's watching this scenario take place. The Kit from Sheltering Sky, the movie, is going by on a camel, who she has hitchhiked on with these other... Arabian men who are going into the desert, and she subsequently is raped also. The women with the flags are 60s Afghani women who are having a feminist moment.
Mm-hmm.
And those three groups of females, and the rest are the males that take place.
Well, you know, they strike me a lot as being related to, and I don't know how conscious you were of this when you were making it or picking images, but you know, you've talked to me a lot about what it was like to be a young woman in the art world in Los Angeles. I mean, and at that time it was really dominated by this sort of boys club. There's a lot of machismo in the art world. You know, I know that Judy Chicago wrote a lot about, you know, trying to wear cowboy boots, trying to be in the room with those guys, and it was such a club of men. And to hang in that club, a lot of female artists at the time that were determined to stick it out, you know, sort of adopted a lot of the same materials, and then also dress. Like, you know, there was, you know, she talked about always putting on a pair of cowboy boots so that she would be taller and also have this sort of like macho presence in a room. Because she was shorter. Yeah. But, you know, I can imagine it must have been pretty hard, you know, to be a young woman in this sort of overtly sexist subculture of painting, which is, of course, to me sounds so weird to say, because painting is something that I think, you know, women inherently have a gift for, and that, you know, we think of societally as being a feminine quality, and yet everybody you think of who's a painter at that time was a man making paintings in Los Angeles. And the presumption was you kind of had to be a real man to be a painter at the time.
Because they were sensitive.
Right. so it must have been like this weird time of watching these guys duke it out over something that, you know, maybe you just sort of had, you know, and then also that, but that you were forced to sort of watch them do a lot of posturing and maybe, I don't know, how do you stay in the room if you point it out to them? You know, that must have been a hard dilemma or a tough situation to be in.
You befriend them.
Right.
I knew a lot of those guys. I remember, in fact, I was reading, can we stop for a second?
Sure.
Because this is locking exactly into.
Go ahead. So you're holding a book. It's Creating the Future, Art in Los Angeles in the 1970s by Michael Fallon.
this book is really interesting. The thing that I was going to say before is that, you know, you befriend the men, which we did. And I remember that Ed Moses had come up to me one time at an opening and he said, you know, Charles Garabedian loves your work. And I was so flattered.
Yeah.
Because I thought Charles Garabedian was really a great artist. I still do. And so there was this sort of embrace, and then years later, there's a show that one of the drip pieces was in, years later, and Ed Moses comes up to me and he goes, he was in the show too, and he goes, you always were a good artist.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's sort of like you get the pat on the back, but you never get to rise up.
Right.
So you have to do it yourself.
Yes.
And what's interesting in this book is that it talks about the feminist movement. It talks about Judy. It talks about, you know, the Chicano stuff. It talks about the black stuff that happened. It primarily is all men. And then, interestingly enough, it gets to this chapter where he's calling the new romantics. And he talks about Ellen Ruppersberg, and he talks about Terry Allen. He talks about Paul McCarthy. He talks about Mike Kelly. And at the end of that chapter, he talks about Alexis Smith and Carol Corompus. And on one hand, I'm happy to be there, and she was a very good friend of mine in that time period, and still is. And there was us,
right.
So it's like you're.
You had to.
You're swimming upstream,
right?
But you know, you're always in a different boat. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the numbers are like, you know, in art school, it's dominated by women. It's 80% women. And yet, and if you go look in galleries, that's not the balance, the gender balance of artists represented, you know. And so something happens, you know, after school, which is that, you know, these artists get selected out as being the hot art stars, and it's a crop of guys
right.
all the time. And yet you and Alex and, you know, we're just kept going, you know, you kept going and kept showing up and kept trying to get in that circle or kept, you know, inserting your work and kept trying and watching your peers, you know, like, you know, when you think about Paul McCarthy, you know, for example, you know, show and make money all of a sudden, you know, out of the sky, kind of like boom, really a lot of success and a lot of aggressive financial success, and you guys kept going. I don't know if I'm coming to a question, but at some point there must have been a sense of frustration bursting out, and I think that that's the the thing that I find really interesting in your narrative paintings is that the frustration is woven into a story, and it's always like this epic love hate story, you know, like you
between men and women.
Yeah, between men and women, because you I think have a real deep admiration for masculine energy, and I mean I think that you, but you also, you know, defy it a lot in your work. You know, there's always the women standing up, holding objects, MIA, standing with a gun, or, you know, the girl standing with a skateboard, or the suffragettes standing with their fists in the air. You know, there's this, you know, reassertion to put yourself back in that epic narrative, always as, you know, embodied by these different female characters. And they're always in this dynamic, tense relationship with these male characters who, you know, emerge. But they, so they're never wholly female or wholly male. They're always these, you know, this complex web of gendered relationships, but they're passionate ones. You know, there's a lot of fighting and fucking and, you know, stuff, good stuff going on there in the images, which is much more like real life. I mean, it, you know, we are all kind of, you know, we're not operating in a bubble of only self or other.
Well, a lot of the work that I did in the early 70s was autobiographical. When I did a switchover from what he calls in the book my more conceptual painting to the autobiographical, to where the male-female stuff comes in, Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. There was a whole set of painting collages on paper and larger works that I was using my own body in. One of them, an early piece from the 70s, is they're photos of me in the library, opposed to photos of a bodybuilder from York, Pennsylvania, where my friend Larry Williams was from. And as he's doing a certain kind of lift of the weight, I'm doing the weights with the books.
Yeah.
So it's like we're gender opposite. He's using the barbell, and I'm using the book.
Yeah.
So it's like, who has the strength? Who has the power? Where does that come from? Are we equal? Does one win?
Right. Yeah. It's this interesting take on the whole idea of who gets to write the narrative. You know,
me.
You get to write it. Yeah.
But see, that's where I think that's where the power comes from. You take the power and you say, okay, I am female, I have the power, I get to write the narrative, and I get to write it from my voice. And one of the last quotes that Michael Fallon uses in that book is that I just want, when people are looking at paintings, I want them to be able to see.
Yeah.
And the see is in capitals. So I think that's sort of been a continuation. And it's also, you know, I would say that making people see things is talking about things that you're angry about.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't, you know, all pretty. And it's not in one layer of physical or psychological space. It's multi-layered and it's fractured. And that's why most of my work has had this kind of, what they do in cinema is they do a lot of cutting and they do a lot of editing and they do a lot of overlaying. And I try to do that on a picture plane so that it can have a cacophonous look to it. But if you really, as a viewer, start putting the pieces together, you get it.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because it's a collage-like space, and it reminds me, and you said that in the book he talks a lot about, who's the artist who went to CalArts who also did collage-like paintings? Male artist, contemporary of Robert Longo. Not Robert Longo, though. I'm spacing on his name.
Painter?
Yes.
Went to New York?
Yes.
Oh, I am too.
He's in the book. I'll make his closet so I can find it, because I know, and you'll get the reference immediately.
And there's also there's a reference.
David Sally's, that's the name of the artist I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So the major difference, though, between your work and David Sally's work is that there are often female bodies in David Sally's work, but they're disembodied. They're not human beings. They're
a nude woman sitting on a stool with a dunce cap on.
Right. They don't have identities. They don't have voices. They don't feel like they're real people. They feel like they're vessels or objects. And so, you know, when I think about your work versus his work never feels personal at all, whereas I think your work does feel like it's coming from a single voice, like a person who is identifying with characters and telling a personal story. I may not be aware of all the levels of the personal story, but it gives me enough of an entree to have an emotional moment with the work that I don't feel with David Sally's work. David Sally's work feels a lot more formalist to me. Even though I think it has some things in common with your work in terms of its the way that these paintings are put together and made, but they seem to be about two different emotional states to me.
The claim of his work, or he claims his work to be, that there is no content,
mm-hmm.
you know, essentially that there is no concept between the relationship of the images, the characters, so to speak, which is bullshit, you know, because when you, he says that, or it's paraphrased that he says that he's putting together those images so that they cancel meaning.
Right.
You cannot use certain images and put them together and expect that they are going to cancel meaning, because no matter what you do, the viewer is going to try and give meaning to them somehow. So therefore, if it cancels all meaning, it doesn't work, A. B, he becomes a designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a difference of everything, every image that I put in there has a very specific meaning and a relationship to the other images that also have meaning. They may seem incoherent in that they don't belong together, but when inspected, they do form a fractured sort of connection.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's like the difference between reading a William Gibson sci-fi novel, looks like Neuromancer, versus reading a dystopian future novel by Margaret Atwood, like The Handmaid's Tale. You know, they're both dystopian future novels, but one is written by a person who is so focused on the ego of the writer or the main character that no one else in the story has any identity or emotion. So everything is flattened out. A woman is a body. She's like a sexy object. A person is an adversary that's shot. You know, it's very flat. Whereas Margaret Atwood shows you the same societal setting, but then focuses on what it's like to negotiate those places as a human being. And so it's very much about the psychological interior of each character.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes the motivation for each actor and actress in the story. And I found that to be really true. Reading, you know, when you read a female author and you compare the way that they write, there's also a lot more focus on the emotional interior space of the characters, and I see that in painting as well, too. And, you know, we're allowed as viewers to piece it together in different ways because there's a respect for that kind of feeling that we're going to bring to each image, but there's not the same willingness to reduce people or characters to flat objects in the way that I think a more formalist designer would do that, right? And so, you know, and I think that what happens is when that happens in painting, specifically, it gets thrown into this realm of being sentimental versus being objective. And even though all of the same skills and tools are being used,
cool.
all the same thought process really is being employed.
Mm-hmm.
It's this way to subtly gender the work and then therefore dismiss it as not being serious, which really bothers me because I think that
or it's thought of as illustration,
right? Right.
Which is, you know, bad.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's
like how do you illustrate a point? I guess the term is just wrong. Illustration is, it can be looked at as that, mm-hmm. that it is illustration. Well, I guess it could be thought of that, and that I am illustrating a point of view, and that actually hasn't even been brought up that much about my work. But I know that's always, especially when you're dealing with figurative imagery. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to have a female nude that is just considered to be a female nude, but it's different to be very specific about the role of the male or the female that you're using for me. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because I refer a lot to literature in the work, too. I mean, it's not just a girl on the painting. It's a specific young Afghani skateboard girl holding her skateboard with her funny little sweater on and her coverings of the head. But she's empowered.
So tell me about the painting with MIA at the bottom. This is a vertical rather than a horizontal piece, and it's a shaped canvas. It has like an arc at the top.
The title of this painting is The Sheikh of Araby - Lady Be Good. And having done the first painting that was primarily all male, I wanted this to have a lot more women in it. So, as you described it, it is, it's tall and thin and rounded at the top. And the primary, or the largest image in this painting is a dress. A Saudi Arabian dress. She has no, it's just the dress, and mm-hmm. her arms are outspread. So at the top of the painting are clips from Lawrence of Arabia at the beginning where the Arab sees airplanes coming in and thinks he can kill them with his horse and his sword. The camels quietly move underneath them. And then the four figures at the top that are sitting on top of the Saudi Arabian woman's dress is an image from King Nine from the Twilight Zone, an image from a woman called a film called Slave Girl, the image from the couple from The Sheltering Sky, and then Kit observing all of them. They're all sitting on her, so she's essentially floating mm-hmm. through black space. The Sheikh of Araby attached to her two arms and dangling sort of like ornaments are two women. When Lawrence of Arabia came out, the fashion world embraced it, really embraced it. So they're from that, and then there's an upside down image inside the dress that's stitched onto the dress essentially of a woman veiled with bright red lipstick in front of her and her nails painted red. And then also embroidered, not literally, but painted to be embroidered, is a flower power image from the 60s of a record album. And at the bottom is a take from a movie called a desert movie that Humphrey Bogart was in. So she's there. She's floating through all these black, in silhouette, black birds are floating through, which look like they're bad, but they're actually American eagles. And at the bottom is a crashed plane, which happened pre-World War II. Americans were flying over to bomb Italy. It's a real story. And they went down in the middle of the Sahara Desert. They were trying to find their way back. The plane was destroyed, so they walked. They thought they were walking towards the water, and they were going into the desert. They all died. 20 years, 30 years later, they discover this plane, which is Lady Be Good.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of next to her, or next to that, is this woman from Morocco covering her face because she doesn't want to be photographed. And then the bottom part is MIA from Bad Girl with the other bad girls and their guns. There's women with guns.
Right, right. I love that image so much.
And they're young women.
It's so neat to have Bad Girl right underneath Lady Be Good. And Lady Be Good is just she's literally a wreck, you know? She's wrecked.
She's
a
shit.
MIA is a bad girl, and she's so strong and just resplendent. You know, she's her metallic breasts, like, she's amazing. That's such an amazing... I think MIA is an amazing artist as well.
It's just the image itself is so... It's kind of like she's got her hand on her hip, and she's sitting with her face kind of pushed up. It's like, I dare you.
Yeah.
Come into this territory. So the women are empowered in this painting, I think.
Definitely. You know, even the lipstick under the veiled woman's nose is like a tooth or like a nail or like a bullet. I mean, it's got really like this, or this like engorged clitoris. It's like this potentially...
It's phallic.
Yeah, no, it's totally definitely phallic. Got an aggressive... movement to it, and all the red, you know, like the red that flows through it. I mean, it's like this sort of, vulva in the center, you know, everywhere that radiates out from the center of that dress, making it kind of this luscious opening.
Yeah.
And the round at the top, of course, you know, mimics that arc too, like the arc of the body. It's really opposite of the other painting in so many different ways. It's like a vortex, you know, like it pulls you in to the center of it.
Well, it's opposite of the first painting,
yeah,
which is predominantly all male figures. And that was like, okay, the boys got their say-so, now the girls have their say-so.
Yeah.
And I think in the... this third painting that's in progress, it's like both of them are merging. And I want to do two more paintings, one that's a tall, skinny one, 8 feet tall, 4 wide, and another curved painting. I know the general topic of both of them. The tall, skinny one is going to be about the rape,
mm-hmm.
and the curved one is going to kind of center around the film Morocco that Marlene Dietrich is in,
mm-hmm.
where she talks about, she falls in love with Gary Cooper, who's in the Foreign Legion, and she's a singer, of course, in the Middle East, and she talks about how she is a member of the Foreign Legion also, because she has to do the fight, too.
It's interesting. I mean, rape is such a bloated topic, but it's also this point at which so much female artwork begins. I mean, if you think about, like, Artemisia Gentileschi, you know, she wouldn't have been able to be an artist had she not been liberated. And her liberation was contingent upon her assault. You know, she was no longer sort of marriageable because she had been assaulted. And so her assault became the reason that she was allowed to be an artist, because
mm-hmm.
she had to support herself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as horrible as that event was, I think that a lot of really strong and powerful women have that point of departure. Like, it's like this one path is closed off, and so but another path is opened. It's a way of certainly changes the energy and the work, you know.
Yeah, it's and a lot of the earlier work that I dealt with was dealing with really very forward sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
One of the paintings that I did, which was a very large painting called The Bad Seed, had an image of it. Well, the main image was of a woman giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
So her legs are spread. She's bigger than we are.
Yeah.
And eye level, when you look, you're looking, you know, at her crotch, at her vagina,
yeah.
and what's spilling out of it, an American football player. And I remember when I had that show, my mother came to the show, and she turned around and she looked at the painting, and I didn't say anything because she sort of, she knows me, she's,
yeah.
you know, whether she gets used to it or not was a whole other thing. And she turned to me and she said, "Is it okay if I don't look at that painting?"
Aww.
And I said, "Yeah, it's okay." So she turned around. And it was funny to see her in front of that painting. You know, it was sort of like... but, you know, I mean, she totally supported me in terms of being an artist. So that's why I had to give her permission not
yeah.
to look at that painting. So that kind of imagery is, you know, permeated all of the work.
Perfect.